Welcome to Restaurant Dealmaking Exposed, the only show that equips you with everything you need to know about restaurant transactions. In this show, we tell you all about how to make the sale or purchase of your restaurant not just possible, but successful. Now, here are your hosts, ex-restaurateurs and seasoned brokers, Patrick Toda and Andy Mirabel.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Restaurant Dealmaking Exposed. This is our first episode. So I'm Andy Mirabel. I'm here with Patrick Toda. We're excited to get this podcast off the ground and share some exciting stuff about our industry. Let me introduce my co-agent and friend, Patrick Toda.
Hey, everybody. Well, let me just start by saying I have about 30 years of restaurant experience, starting with washing dishes at my uncle's deli. After growing up in my family businesses, took my talents to the corporate level. Became a general manager and training store manager at Starbucks for many years, and then same titles at Jamba Juice. With Jamba Juice, towards the end, I was an area store manager, which was responsible for an entire district of managers and about $12 million in revenue. After my stint in the corporate arena, I purchased my own restaurant and grew to two locations here in San Francisco. I was the owner and operator. I have many successes and a couple of failures that I'm sure I'll share with you over the course of this podcast. Since 2018, I've been with Restaurant Realty and absolutely loving every moment of it. I feel like for the first time in my life, everything I've worked towards, all of my talents all come together to make me great at this. I'm married. I have two amazing West Highland Terriers, which I compare to living with criminals.
Woof.
The dog's not the wife, by the way.
Smart.
Let me introduce Andy, the stunning Andy Mirabel. Andy came to Restaurant Realty just a little after me. As soon as I met him, I knew my wolf pack grew. Andy cares so passionately about his clients and takes so much care into every transaction. It's as if he's working on his own restaurant deal. It's no mystery I get along with Andy, given that he shares the same birthday as my wife.
Yeah, that was a good coincidence when we learned that. And thank you for including me in your wolf pack, but it sounds like you're calling me a Westland Terrier instead. So thank you. Thank you. All right. Thank you, Patrick. That's really nice of you. Yeah, I'm riding Patrick's coattails. He's the smart one of the two of us. And unfortunately, because we're on a podcast, I can't ride my good looks because he always refers to that. Okay. No one can see me. All right. Yeah, I have two and a half decades or more in the hospitality industry. I've done, every position, and I dove into management really at a young age of 19 or 20, running some, high volume bars and such in Los Angeles. I jumped quickly to general management of many restaurant and bar concepts. My first love, where I just really loved the company I worked for, was Blowfish Sushi. It was a really modern electronic music and high level of sushi production in the Bay Area. They were really great flagship there. And I helped them grow their brand to multiple locations, including San Jose, West Hollywood, New Zealand, and such. But after a decade there, I wanted to do something on my own. So I created my own concept. I created a restaurant concept called School. We are a Japanese fusion restaurant focused mostly on Japanese and Californian cuisine. Our flagship store was in San Francisco, and I opened that with my partner and dear friend, Chef Moto, and his wife. I also opened a secondary school restaurant in Sacramento, which is my hometown. We did a much more casual Japanese gastropub there. And, the pandemic hit, and my brain already had been in a place where I'm like, wow, running restaurants is my passion, but it also takes a lot out of you. And I'm sure we'll be touching on that over all of our episodes, how hard it is to run restaurants. I missed my kids when they were young. So I decided I wanted to get into something else. And I got a nod from somebody at Restaurant Realty. And I dove in and I joined in early 2019 with Restaurant Realty. That's where I met Patrick. He was already swinging for the fences and had a lot of clients and stuff. And I've learned a ton from him along the road. So this is why I'm very happy we're doing this now and sharing a podcast with you guys about our experiences and the industry as a whole. While working for Restaurant Realty for the last 5+ years, we've done various deals, including real estate, bars, restaurants, and all kinds of food concepts. We also deal with alcoholic beverage control license applications and transfers. And Patrick and I both have worked towards getting our CBB accreditation, which is nice to have on our signature plate on the email, if you know what I mean. Anyways, I've been part of roughly 75 transactions since I've been with Restaurant Realty. It's include bars, lease deals, real estate that's related to restaurants and such. In addition to working with Restaurant Realty and no longer having my own restaurants, I am a devoted father to two amazing kids. They are not dogs. They are humans. Yana and Kai Mirabel, those are my kiddos. I love them to death, and I'm so happy that I get to spend time with them, more time with them, that I don't have brick-and-mortar restaurants anymore. But I'll stray away from that for now. Anyways, that's enough about me and we can dive into it. So one of the funny questions that I get often, or funny looks I should say, is when people say, what do you do? And it was really easy when we had restaurants. It was cool to say, yeah, I got a really nice restaurant in San Francisco, or I have a Japanese gastropub. But now when people say, so what do you do, Andy? Or what do you do, Patrick? I say I'm a restaurant broker. And I don't know about you, but I get some eyebrows raised, some confused looks and so on. It's not something that's very common. You know, when you say I'm a commercial broker or commercial leasing agent, when I say I'm a restaurant broker, I get some eyebrows. How do you navigate that one?
Yeah, I'm still trying to tell my mom what I do. She still doesn't understand exactly what it is I do. It's funny because I still kind of pinch myself for not having to wake up in the morning and leave the house very early and go to the restaurant. And it's like, you know, sometimes I get to just work right off my kitchen table. You know, it's just so much different than my life used to be.
I get that when years have gone by and I feel like I should get up and rush to the restaurant and be somewhere, and not having to do that is like you, I pinch myself. It's so bizarre.
Yeah, it's the hustle that I miss. I mean, I was just watching The Bear in season 2 of The Bear, where their person is like expoing in the kitchen. And I just got this like rush. I was like, I really want to do that.
Yeah, the good nerves, like, right?
Yeah. So yeah, what is it that we do? We sell people's businesses with a focus on restaurants, bars, or related real estate. I'm basically a real estate agent, but for selling someone's business, not their home. You know, in a business, there's both tangible and intangible assets, and selling someone's goodwill that they've, you know, been working for 20, 30 years for is worth something if, you know, if they're profitable and there's strong revenue. So that's what we're selling, right? We're selling somebody to come in there and take over income. And that is a little different than selling someone's home or, you know, just a real estate transaction in general.
What are some of the things we put value on? You know, when we're giving an opinion of value in selling something, our sellers come to us and say, what is this worth? And they probably have an idea in their head what it's worth, or something that they are wanting to get out of it. And we have to break it down into these categories. And so just like Patrick says, you know, goodwill, these leasehold improvements and investments into the space all have worth. All the industry related equipment, I mean, it's extensive in these spaces. So there's a lot of value in that. Their lease, if it's a strong lease. And, you know, we'll keep touching on goodwill because that's obviously highly important.
Absolutely. And I think the goodwill is very important if there is actually profit that comes along with it, you know, if you understand what I'm saying. So how do you describe our job, Andy?
When I say I'm a restaurant broker and people kind of give me that confused look sometimes, I say that we found our perfect niche. Like, this is what we do. We're really lucky to be commercial real estate agents. I find it bizarre that we had to take the same tests as someone selling a house in a neighborhood. And I think you listeners over the course of our episodes and such are going to see that we were taught in live time on how to, you know, get through all of these very, very difficult and nuanced transactions because they're restaurant specific. This industry is very complicated. So I let people know that, you know, we're selling the restaurant concept. We're selling the goodwill. We're selling a lease if it's strong. We're selling the improvements to the space. But the path to getting to the finish line on these transactions are very difficult. And so I think Patrick and I, through the course of this, are also going to, you know, touch on all of our fun experiences learning the niche that we're in, which is restaurant brokerage.
I agree. I mean, going back on something that you said, I think where I learned a lot was a transaction for selling my own business as just a seller, not even as an agent. I learned so much during that transaction. It was very difficult. I had really hard buyers, and I probably learned so much in that transaction that I was able to carry right into my career. So that's kind of what put me in the idea of like, hey, I think I should do this.
That's funny that you say that. In selling my second location, it was a nightmare transaction. I wasn't a broker at this time, so obviously I had an agent, and it was a nightmare transaction. I had young buyers who were nice guys. They've never owned a restaurant. Okay. They took early possession, which we're going to touch on at some point in these things, and it turned into a nightmare. The landlord and them didn't get along. They stripped my restaurant dry. They owed me money as a seller note. I mean, there was so many bad experiences in my first restaurant sale transaction as a customer, as a seller, that I'm surprised I got into this industry, but it really helped me learn a lot of the pitfalls and the complications. And I think restaurateurs like a little bit of pain. And Patrick and I are both ex-restaurateurs, and we're okay to deal with a little bit of pain to get through these transactions.
So, like I said earlier, we need that hustle every now and then. So.
Yeah, yeah. So let's see, you know, what goes into a restaurant sale, Patrick? I think a lot of folks, again, can, you know, equate our role to selling a house. And this is so far from it. Okay. Or just a commercial broker getting, you know, Quiznos into a strip mall space and getting a new lease by the commercial landlord. What's different about our role? Or enlighten people on what the transaction is and all the things that are involved.
Yeah. I mean, one of the questions I get asked often is, how long is this going to take? You know, I need to sell today. And I said, look, this isn't a house in the San Francisco Bay Area. We're not going to be in and out of this transaction within 30 days. You know, once we get a listing, I tell people it could take 6 to 8 months before we're completely done with this transaction. And there, a lot of people are very surprised by that. They're like, what do you mean?
Can I chime in on that one too? I mean, one of my biggest prefaces in my initial meetings with sellers these days is the timeline to sell in 2019 is different than the timeline to sell in 2024. It has gone up because the pandemic had such a terrible effect on our industry that there's so much inventory out there that prices have been driven down. So it's a buyer's market. There's a lot of spaces for lease with no key money. So it's hard to sell a restaurant when there's this much out there. And I oftentimes say we've gone from the ability to sell a restaurant in roughly 4 to 6 months, if it's a good business, you know, to 8, 10, 12 months at times to sell. And people are shocked. So I really want to be open with that because I don't want to mislead them. I want to perform for my clients. So they need to be aware of what's going on in the market before they put their business on the market.
Sure. Again, going back to this whole timeline thing, it's like, let's say we list a business, you know, it always takes a few months for someone to locate that business, kick the tires on it. But let's just say that today I find a buyer and we go into contract. You know, that timeline for this to get through that contract is going to be about 3 months if it includes an ABC license. If it doesn't include an ABC license, you're at give or take 2 months potentially, which, you know, all matters on, you know, I'm sure Andy knows this, the landlord. But let's just say we go into contract today. What happens from here on out? Well, you have a contingency period for the buyer to do all their due diligence. You have a lease contingency, which is the biggest bottleneck in most transactions.
The deal killer, the landlord deal killer, as we call it.
Yeah. I mean, most deals don't happen because the landlord doesn't allow it, basically. So it's one of the biggest and most important parts of making a transaction go through. And, you know, I think this is something that we'll probably touch on in later episodes, why it's so important to set your buyer up for being approved by the landlord. So once you get through the contingency period, you start the escrow process and you start the ABC license transfer. And that could take, you know, 60 plus days. I know that right now with the ABC in most offices, they're understaffed and it's taking a little bit longer. You've got to have a lot of patience during this transaction. And it's really hard for a lot of sellers because it's so emotional. So, you know, one of the things that I try and, you know, just from the very get-go is really set expectations. And, you know, this is par for the course. It's not your deal. This is how it normally goes for a lot of people.
Yeah. So we'll be talking about the process in more details and definitely field any of your questions, and we'll provide ways to contact us if you have questions or interest in potentially selling your business or setting it up to be sold in the future. We'd love to help any of our listeners with that. But I want to get back on track in the sense that we're talking about our background. We talked very briefly kind of about what we do in the process. I think we really want to resonate to you, our listeners, in the sense that why we love what we do. And for me, and I'll ask Patrick the same question, is how do we still feel connected to the hospitality world? How do we still feel connected to all of our, you know, old friends in the industry, chefs, restaurateurs, you know, operators? This job does exactly that for me. I still feel very connected to the restaurant world. I get to speak the language as regarding to, you know, equipment, licenses, how to get a business up and running. We get to see and tour kitchens all the time. It's part of our opinion of value process. But just interacting with the sellers and buyers gives me a lot of satisfaction because, you know, I can connect to them. I've walked in their shoes and I just think they feel very comfortable coming to me with their concerns, questions, and they feel comfortable throughout the process because I've walked in their shoes and because I have real restaurant experience, ownership experience. So again, I'm very thankful for what I do, and I still feel connected in the restaurant world without having to be chained to my restaurant 16 hours a day. So, if you will.
Yeah, it's funny. A long time ago in a past life, I was a real estate agent. I got my license around 2008. So the housing market blew up in that time. And so I was selling a lot of houses that were selling for about half the price that they previously had sold for. And to be perfectly honest, I hated selling homes. I hated doing open houses. I just always felt like a fish out of water. And so for a long time, I just didn't use the license. And, you know, when bought my own restaurants and all that stuff. And as I got out of it, I still had my real estate license. And, you know, when Steve Zimmerman asked if I can, you know, we started talking about joining Restaurant Realty, and I was able to use my real estate license and apply it to something that I've been so passionate about and been doing basically my whole entire life. And from the very first day when I first walked into a restaurant with a client, I felt like I knew exactly what I was doing. I felt like I know restaurants. I didn't feel like a fish out of water. And so, yeah, I mean, it's wonderful that we get to apply all of our knowledge in the restaurant industry, all of our experience that we've, you know, been working to this point, and do it from a restaurant sales broker. It's just been a nice, you know, level up for me from where I was before.
Yeah, absolutely. And you gave a little nod to Steve Zimmerman. He's the owner of Restaurant Realty Company. I got to give him a nod too. He's been a great mentor. We get to learn from the guy who really wrote the book on California restaurant brokerage, and he literally wrote the book, but he's fantastic. Our team is fantastic. And it's just nice that we work for such a good brokerage with every single agent is a restaurateur or ex-restaurateur and knows, you know, how to talk the lingo and really understands the numbers, the bones of the restaurants and everything else. So
I'm sure we'll get Steve on here at some point.
Yeah. I think we will for sure. But more specifically, I'm really thankful to have built the bond with Patrick since I started working there. I've learned a lot from him. He's a very head smart person. He knows the rules, the laws, all the regulations, and he's really helped me along the way with transaction and in a lot of ways. So one of the other ways I can draw on my experience, though, is, you know, hospitality is about being kind and giving good service, right?
Yep,
it's being a friendly
absolutely.
Face. And I'm very confident in my ability to be there for my clients. Answer the phone every time. You
We're
know,
still in the hospitality business at the end of the day.
Yeah. And that makes me feel really good in a sincere way when my clients say sincerely that they felt supported and that we gave good service. So that's really key to me too. All right. Where are we going now, Patrick?
Well, I'm going to ask you, what is your favorite restaurant transaction?
Oh my gosh. There are so many. I think it'd be easier if you asked me which one was tough or a little bit hard. No, I'm just kidding. You know, I talked a little bit about one that was hard, which was my own before I was even in the restaurant industry. And, you know, there's so many things that went wrong with that transaction and it was painful. We have those transactions along the way. And a lot of the times it's, you know, dealing with difficult landlords, non-responsive landlords, or really challenging buyers who oftentimes are unreasonable. We can have hard sellers who have too many expectations, you know? So there's a lot of things that can go, you know, happen along the way. You know, I think one of my favorite transactions was a really popular, it's a 7-day a week breakfast, lunch, and dinner spot, but mostly focused on breakfast and brunch. It's called Fandy's up in Sebastopol. It's a wildly successful business. And it's funny I'm saying that this was one of my favorite transactions because it was one of the hardest transactions. It took nearly 8 months to get done.
Oh, wow.
Given a lot of the SBA funding, the existing EIDL loan from the SBA for the seller. His wife gave birth in another country at about the 23rd hour of the transaction.
You can't make this up.
No. The landlord, we got them approved by the landlord, the buyers. And by the way, the buyers are my favorite clients. They own various restaurants in the Bay Area, and they're from Nepal, and they are fantastic human beings. I love working with them. We got them approved by the landlord, and then guess what? Unbeknownst to me, the building sold, and a new landlord came along after we got the approval from the previous landlord. So we started over again with new approvals,
wow,
new lease approvals, and it didn't go well with that landlord. We got it done, but it was very hard and delay after delay. But to get my favorite people into a successful business that they're going to, you know, operate hands-on and continue on the legacy of this community restaurant that, you know, is loved by multiple generations over there, really was a good one, you know, and there's so many good ones, but I think sometimes the hardest ones are the best, not the easiest ones.
Sure. My favorite transaction was a place called The Galley in Morro Bay. First of all, I was in the Central Coast, so it was very enjoyable to drive down there and be on the Central Coast. So I think that
I like how you can spin that positively. I was going
to
say that sounded like a long commute.
Hey, you got to stay the night and you know, a little forced staycation kind of thing, you know?
All right, heard, yes.
But, you know, with this transaction, it was just one of those like perfect deals where from the moment I showed up to the restaurant, I was assuming it was going to be one of these like kind of greasy seafood restaurants that are on the, you know, in a touristy kind of area. But when I walked into the restaurant, it was like meticulous, super clean, well taken care of. And then the seller, you know, when I met him, is just this really sharp guy. His name is Peter. I really enjoyed working with him. We had really good rapport with each other. As we get later into the transaction, we found the buyer. The buyer was, someone I had really good rapport with. They were super easy to work with. And then, the landlord part of it was very easy too. It was just like this perfect deal in many respects. And so I always go to that one, the Galley in Morro Bay. If anybody's in the neighborhood there, I would highly suggest going there because it's a great place to go.
It's funny because you pointed out in that transaction, it feels good when good things happen to good people and everybody is working in good faith in the same direction. What percentage of transactions are the buyer, seller, landlord all working concurrently towards a really good transaction? It's a little tough.
It almost never happens. I mean, at first the seller was a little suspicious of the buyer. There was a little bit of at first the seller was like, I don't know about this guy, but I'll tell you what, after we started getting to the transaction, I mean, the seller had typical seller kind of feelings. They were very emotional and thought that, the buyer might not be the right person. But as they started to meet each other and get to know each other, I think they have a great relationship to this day at this point.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so it's interesting because a lot of times sellers have these feelings against buyers, but it's more about their emotions. It's
emotional
with their
attachment.
Restaurant. Yeah.
They've put their blood, sweat, and tears into this. And I get it. It's so hard to walk away from this. And you're like, you don't think anyone's going to treat it like you did.
Yeah.
So
exactly. Yeah. And this seller put a lot into that restaurant. There haven't been very many owners of this restaurant. It's been around for many years. And so it was really passing on to the next person. Yeah. It couldn't have gone any better. And I'll always remember that transaction. So yeah. I would love to work with either of them again.
That's good. Yeah. And, I'm kind of poking a little bit of fun previously at, how many transactions do people really work well together to get to the finish line? There's a lot of transactions. Yeah. If we're dealing with professionals, then it usually works well. Of course, we have a lot of problem children along the way, let's call it, right? But, I think it's my job, it's our job to mitigate a lot of those energies and those tough hurdles. We got to mitigate that for our clients and try to protect them a little bit from unnecessary BS along the way. It's our job to navigate these things and get through some of the hurdles so they can focus on their day-to-day operations, or our buyers can, be a little more stress-free.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, it's very hard to be a seller. I mean, I was there too. And I always, when I'm going through each and every transaction, I try to remember how I felt when I was selling my business. And it was, it was not just emotional, but stressful. I was having to meditate on a daily basis. I mean, it really took me to the next level. So I try to remember that when we're going through a transaction and, try to let the seller know what's par for the course, what might be, just kind of hopefully makes them kind of calm down a little bit. But yeah, that's how it always goes, right?
Yeah, totally. You're going to hear probably a ton about pandemic stuff because I think it's going to be another 5 years before we slow down on talking about pandemic stuff. But my most beloved restaurant was my flagship in San Francisco, and I had 11 great years there. We were successful. I had a fantastic team. I loved it. I loved it. I loved it. But of course, when the pandemic hit, I didn't have a good landlord. And so we'll keep talking about landlords, but I lost my restaurant there due to a bad landlord and, accrual of rents and everything else through the pandemic. We couldn't get up and running again, and it was just tough. So, I got pushed into this industry and being a broker a little bit more unexpectedly maybe than Patrick did, but I'm really thankful. I'm going to take a positive out of the negative of the pandemic, and I'm thankful for where we are now. We're not schlubs. We did collectively about 50 deals last year alone between us. So
I would say, yeah,
we can be tongue in cheek and we can have a good conversation with you guys, but we're confident in what we do and how we do it and how we support our clients. And maybe you'll get a kick. I think our cover art does really speak to who we are. I would like flip-flops and swim trunks on all the time if I could while I'm working, but that's not professional. So take a look at that photo. You'll get a laugh out of us.
So let me get to my next question here, Andy. What was your worst transaction?
Outside of being a seller, you heard me say the word early possession again.
Yeah,
that is like a dirty word in our industry. And I think a lot of brokers use early possession as a tool to get to the finish line quicker, and they shouldn't. It is a big risk, mostly for our sellers. There's risk involved with our buyers on that too. But taking possession before your escrow closes or the ABC license has transferred, it's a huge red flag. And I'll say my hands down worst transaction was with a buyer in a Bay Area city. I will not disclose the business or the city. And I had a very outspoken. On paper, he was great financially and experientially. But back to, you know, the early possession transaction that really was a nightmare for me and a huge learning experience was that I had a buyer who was really financially and experientially strong on paper, and he was absolutely steadfast in the fact that he wanted early possession of this hotel, restaurant, bar before the holidays. And I mean, makes common sense, right? You make a large percent of your annual sales in these downtown, you know, hotel restaurant spaces during the holidays. So I get it. We all got it. But once he got in there, he was a disaster. He did not know how to operate restaurants. He scared away his whole team. He let the place in disrepair. He wasn't paying bills and vendors. So the seller is still the true owner, is still the true owner in this situation because escrow has not closed. There was a sublease in place, but then the landlord started not liking this guy because of how he was doing things. And it just unraveled. And then he stuck his heels in the sand and he just said he was doing nothing wrong. And we stagnated for nearly 6 months. Lawyers were involved. The business was just decimated. It was a very helpless feeling. And I think that, hey, I did 2 early possession deals already this year, but they were only for very specific situations. So yeah, it was a nightmare. I felt awful for my seller. I felt awful for his team who had to go through this. I felt awful that the business was so severely damaged. We eventually closed escrow, got all the funds, you know, to my seller and such, and he got out. But man, it probably took 5 years off of his life because this transaction went on for 10 or 11 months.
Wow. That that would take a toll on myself there. So that's crazy. Yeah.
How about you? What's a bad one?
Yeah, there's one particular deal that I'll never forget. You know, it was a franchise here in the Bay Area. I won't say the name. And they had 2 locations. You know, the buyer that I was working with, who was working with me directly with the seller. And as I'm going through the contingency period, you know, no deposits made. You know, I'm trying to hold this buyer accountable. And he started to get really angry with me because I was holding him accountable. I was trying to be diplomatic about the whole thing, you know, the entire time. But at some point, I had to kind of put my foot down and, you know, make sure that he was going through this transaction in a timely manner and, you know, and doing everything. Well, at that point, he got really angry with me and decided that he wanted to go find his own agent. So he went and found an agent who was a real estate agent. So they only had experience selling like homes, basically. I later found out that this agent was also his like sister-in-law or something like this.
Of course.
The agent was nice enough, I will say that, but this buyer was, oh my God, I'll never forget him. Anyways, so at this point, I'm, you know, completely stressed out. We had to redo the whole entire transaction. We had to redo the contracts. Finally, we get back into, you know, we get back on track and we start going through the escrow process. At that point, I found out that my seller had purchased the 2 businesses outside of escrow prior to doing this transaction. And I said, wait, you bought them directly from a seller without going through escrow? He's like, yeah. I was like, okay, well, let me let you know what's going on. We have several claims in escrow on your business from bank institutions. We have several claims from government agencies like the sales tax, CDTFA, and they're saying that you owe like hundreds of thousands of dollars. Okay. So
is this why we use escrow? Is this why?
I can't make this up. So the sales tax was like 300,000 plus.
Oh my God.
I was like, oh my God. It was for the prior seller. There was another, you know, like 3 or 4 like bank institution UCC1s of, you know, several thousands of dollars, you know, that I can't even remember the exact amount. We had to go to the CDTFA and, you know, make them understand that the current seller was not the same as the prior seller. And at some point they did drop that from my seller. But for a long time, we were thinking that he was going to have to come up with, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars, which he wasn't going to do. However, the bank institutions would not drop and they wanted their money. And so my seller had to pay all of those bank institutions off in order for them to release the UCC1 so that we can continue in escrow.
Wow.
So that, you know, was a pretty lengthy time right there just alone. Then, you know, I'm sure I'm missing a bunch of other little small details, but then we do the final walkthrough. And I don't know if you've ever done a final walkthrough where both the seller and the buyer cannot stand each other. But
yeah, about 3 weeks ago.
It was, oh my God, there was like some serious nickel and diming going on, and like, you know, this is broken, that's not working, I'm not paying you for that kind of food and that, you know, inventory. Oh, and it, I mean, it was like several hours to do a walkthrough and inventory. The two businesses finally did close, and it closed on my birthday of all days. And
did you take a nap or take a shot? One or the other.
I went out with my wife and I had a cocktail for sure. You know, but let me just tell you this. I mean, it was early on in my career. I probably learned so much from that one transaction. You know, things that we take for granted in the purchase agreement that, you know, we just know as terms of the purchase agreement. But when you start testing all of that stuff and the buyer's testing what, you know, each term means and the whole escrow process that we tell our clients about, like, you know, I saw it all unraveling and I started to see how it all actually works logistically. And I think I learned so much from that. And so even though it was the worst transaction, I'll never forget what I learned in that transaction because I apply it to each and every transaction going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh man, that gives me jitters. But again, we promise we love what we do. We promise. Yes. So I know we hopefully will gain momentum and have listeners that return and, you know, listeners that want to reach out to us and ask questions. I definitely know our listeners are going to get to know us a little bit better as we continue on with more exciting episodes. But if they want to reach us with questions, where are they reaching us, Patrick?
They can reach us at patrickandandy@therestaurantsalesbroker.com.
Great. Yeah, please email us. We really like questions. We really want to engage with you guys. And like I said, if you're interested in selling your business in California, your restaurant, bar, you know, related real estate, any leasing questions, please reach out. We really are an open book and we want to be supportive. And this podcast is a tool for you and for us. We really get to talk about what we do. We love what we do, but it's going to be great for all of us. I'm pretty excited about what we're going to do this season. We're going to move into more episodes. We're going to try to really tackle engaging topics of our industry and give full exposure to them, okay? And really talk through these things. We don't want to always bore you with just, you know, transactional stuff and what we do in our job. We are connected to the restaurant and hospitality world, and we want to keep you guys connected with that too. So we want to tackle some big topics. We're going to have guests on. We're going to have industry professionals that might be, you know, related to finance or attorneys. We want chefs on. We're going to have restaurateurs on. And we're going to have specialists that you may have to reach out to or resource during a transaction of your own in the future. Anything to add to that before we tell them what's going on with episode two?
No, I think we get right into episode two because I'm very excited about that one.
Yeah, you were really plugging them. And thankfully, you know, one degree of separation. My partner knows them well, and I've met them and dined at their restaurant many times. And we're really excited to have Chef David Murphy. He was recently on Top Chef, and his partner, Kayla Abe. They're the owners of Shuggy's Trash Pie and Natural Wine in San Francisco. They also own the Ugly Pickle Company. They are personalities. They're fantastic humans. They're really committed to sustainability. And I think in a much more specific and broad sense of sustainability practices, we're excited to have them on. They're episode two coming up. Anything you want to add to that?
I think you said it all there. I'm just really excited to have a discussion with them about sustainability and anything else that they're willing to talk about on our, you know, within the realm of our show. I'm excited that we got through our first episode.
Yay. Okay, now nap or shot? It's too early for a shot, so yes, okay. Just kidding. We got to get back to our clients. So until next time, we really thank you for listening. I'm Andy Mirabelle. This is Patrick Toda. Please check out episode two. It's awesome. You're going to love these guys and their personality and hear about what they do.
See you all later. If you enjoyed today's show and don't want to worry about missing an episode, you can follow the show wherever you listen to your podcasts. And if you found today's episode interesting or useful, please share it with someone you think would benefit and consider leaving a rating and review.
Reviews help restaurant owners or buyers just like you discover this podcast and benefit from the important topics covered in the episodes. Your opinion matters to us as a listener, so feel free to leave topic suggestions and feedback for us as we will use these to tailor the episodes to you and help you get the most out of listening. Visit www.therestaurantsalesbroker.com/podcast for step-by-step instructions on how to follow, rate, and review.
Thank you all for listening to this week's episode of Restaurant Dealmaking Exposed. If you're considering selling your business and would like a free consultation, reach out to Patrick and Andy at therestaurantsalesbroker.com or visit www.therestaurantsalesbroker.com to learn more.